Good morning. Nice to see you all and nice to be here. I'm going to talk for a few minutes about what we're doing with occupational coding and then take questions and then run to another session we're having just down the hallway on this same topic. So if you don't get your questions in, please see me during all the injury section events. So I have nothing to disclose of a financial nature. And I want to acknowledge the crew on this presentation, myself and Leah Roman from Drexel University School of Public Health, Amy Costello and Josephine Porter from the University of New Hampshire Institute for Health Policy and Practice, and Bob Davis, a consultant with the National Association of Health Data Organizations. And so the impetus for this talk on occupational codes and administrative data emanated from a grant that we received from FEMA to build a non-fatal injury surveillance system for the U.S. Fire Service. And if you're interested in the grants from FEMA, there are pamphlets on the back table to tell you how to apply for research and development grants at FEMA. And so that project is called FIRST. It's a research and development project, but it also has a policy component, and that's what I'm going to be talking about today. So what we know about non-fatal injuries in the fire service is that the estimates are really broad-ranging. They range from 90 non-fatal injuries a year to 80,000 non-fatal injuries a year, depending on the data source, so you know we've got some work to do here. And we know that the work of the fire service is changing, as is the work of a lot of occupational groups. And, for example, we can see that in medical aid, fire departments are responding to more EMS calls than structure fires than ever before, and so their hazards and injuries and exposures are changing. So we all know about surveillance. I won't belabor the point, but, you know, we want to identify new hazards and new exposures and injuries and illnesses. We want to quantify that, and we want to then develop research questions for projects. Surveillance is not research in and of itself. It empowers it, and we need to have reliable systems to do it. So if we look at the traditional data we use in our field, we can look at the administrative data captured by the National Center for Health Statistics in their hospital discharge survey, and we can look at injuries across the life course, look at years, look at patterns. I could have put up a slide about age or race or ethnicity or cause of injury, length of stay, all kinds of things, but what I can't tell you in this slide is who's a firefighter. And I can't tell you any information on anyone who works from these data. So what the policy part of our project is about adding new codes to administrative data, specifically occupation and industry, to the uniform bill, which is what CMS and private payers use to transmit claims between providers and payers. And so we know that the uniform bill has that primary responsibility of reimbursement. We also know that states use that same data for their public health functions. And by doing so, there's a public good created that minimizes duplication of data or parallel data systems development, which is very important for us since it has a burden to the providers. And it enables those surveillance goals that we've talked about on that previous slide. So we're approaching two standard-setting organizations. The first is X12N, which is the Insurance Subcommittee of the American National Standards Institute. These are the geeks responsible for electronic data interchange. What does the data element look like? Is it text? Is it numeric? How long is it? Where does it go on the data form? These are the people who get down into the nitty-gritty of how information gets exchanged electronically. The second group is the National Uniform Billing Committee. That is the group that decides what goes into the uniform bill and gets to be part of those administrative data sets to which we have access. So I want to talk about the Uniform Billing Committee for just a moment because this is a little bit of foreshadowing in this presentation. It was brought together in 1975, hospital associations, national providers, and payers. And their purpose was to develop a single billing form and standard data set that could be used nationwide by institutional providers and payers for handling healthcare claims. So what happens then in the 90s is HIPAA, and HIPAA created data standards maintenance organizations as part of the final rule for electronic data interchange. This was all about administrative simplification. We want everyone singing from the same songbook, and we're going to have certain agencies out there that maintain those standards and evaluate and update those standards. And this falls under the responsibility of the Secretary of Health and Human Services. X12 and NUBC, as well as four other standards groups, are DSMOs under HIPAA. And that's an important thing to remember in this presentation. So the NUBC has actually expanded its mission from one of reimbursement to one of public health. And this is exactly from their mission statement on their website, and it's important for me to read it to you. Over the years, the NUBC has realized that the UB data set has become more than a billing instrument. It also is used by many others, including public health and health researchers, as a tool to gauge the delivery of healthcare services to patients. Therefore, the data set has broad policy implications for shaping the future of our health delivery system. Recently, and this is back in time when they did this, the NUBC increased its membership to include public health and also these electronic standards development organizations. So the NUBC has a specified mission for public health. So here's how the process works. You first approach X12 to say, can you please create this standard? And if they decide to create that standard, they will publish it. If that standard becomes published, then the NUBC can decide to include it as part of the uniform bill. If the NUBC includes those codes, it then goes to the states for implementation, and they can do that whatever way they want. It's just the standard will make sure that they're singing from the same songbook. And this is actually the more burdensome part of the process, state-level implementation. And I'll come back to this slide to show you where we are in this process. So what codes are we talking about? We're talking about the North American Industrial Classification System, or NAICS, which tells us the industry of the person. We're talking about the Standard Occupational Classification Code set, which tells us that person's industry. Now, these codes weren't developed for public health. They were developed from national and international collaborations to be able to do economic and labor market comparisons in the United States and with Canada and Mexico. So again, public health is repurposing data collected for other purposes because it's a lot easier than building parallel or duplicative repetitive data systems. So these codes work together. You first code industry. So I'm going to use firefighters as an exemplar here. Firefighters work in public administration, just like other codes that we're familiar with. This is a hierarchical code set. Eventually, you get down to the industry of fire protection. So if I'm a patient, that's what I say, the industry that I work in. And then when you ask what my occupation is, well, I could be in charge of the communication center in dispatch, or I could be a firefighter. So that's why there's occupational codes that eventually get down to the level of a firefighter. And these codes work together to tell you the story of what does this person do for work and in what industry. So now, when you do these codes manually, this is very arduous and time-consuming, and as we all know, nosologists are highly trained. And so when people try to take narrative text about industry and occupation and code it into NAICS and SOC codes, they are frequently wrong. And so misclassification can occur, all kinds of errors can occur. So NIOSH, in its wisdom, has been working on this for a very long time, but in 2008 amplified this as part of its mission and developed the NIOCS, which is the NIOSH Industry and Occupation Computerized Coding System. It's an algorithm, machine learning, if you will, that takes free text and codes it into an industry and occupation code. Really terrific, codes free text in about 2 to 3 seconds a record, with 90% accuracy. And this is a knowledge database that is still being created. It's going to be released in 2012, and it will have even higher accuracy at this time. If you want to know more about it, Sue Nallen and Pam Schumacher at NIOSH are the people leading the development of this. But it's free. And so in our approach to these committees, we thought this is really great because we've got a technological solution to data that we need. So the benefits are that we capitalize on a system that almost has everything we need. By the addition of two new variables, we get an administrative data set that is now useful for occupational injury and illness surveillance. Because we're collecting occupation on everyone, we extend this benefit from a grant that was initially interested in firefighters to absolutely everyone who works. We were interested in injury, but obviously, as you know, if we're coding these records with occupation, we're not only going to get injury data, but illness data as well. And therefore, we have a system that works for us for trend analysis, identification of new hazards. If we want to know about musculoskeletal problems in workers, we can look at the industry. We can look at what these people are doing for work. And then, of course, it empowers more research through identifying sentinel cases that we want to follow up on. And so a proposal like this to these agencies requires some support. So we have letters of support from OSHA, NIOSH, APHA, CSTE, and various states that are involved in occupational health and safety surveillance. And so let me tell you where we are in the process. In January of this year, we went to X12 and said, could you create NAICS and SOC as standards for electronic data interchange? And they said, actually, NAICS is already a part of our standard. Great. So we said, can you add SOC? So they went through that process. It goes through a technical review. And in June, it went on the ballot. And in September, it was voted on with 90% agreement. So it passed as part of an X12 standard. And that will be out in the implementation guide this fall. So it should be any day now. And that's great. That's a wonderful victory. But it's a very, very small part of the process, because states don't necessarily follow what X12 says just because it says so, that this is a part of a standard. It's a standard you can use, but you have to choose to do it. So then you go to the NUBC. And why do you do that? Because 25 of the 50 states in the United States follow what NUBC says automatically. If they update a code set, if they create a new variable, states have already written into their administrative rules that as the NUBC changes, so shall they. And so this is why there's an economy of scale of going to NUBC when you're trying to get new data elements created. So we went to the NUBC in March of this year with this proposal, and we got 1,000 questions, mostly from hospital associations, saying, this is very burdensome, this is going to be very costly for us, we have 1,000,000 questions. And so what we decided to do is not ask for a vote at that time, and instead we went back and created a white paper, which goes over every question that they have and more, involves evidence from the Institute of Medicine, convened an electronic health records meeting in August of this year. It includes some of the clinical evidence as to why hospitals would benefit from having this information, why payers would benefit by having this information in terms of appropriate workers' comp payment for visits, et cetera. The benefits are clearly there. And that white paper is available on the FIRST website. So we had many conversations with the leadership of the NUBC on the phone prior to a vote and with members of the committee who were against this proposal. And in August, we went to this committee in person with two folks from the NIOCS team in Cincinnati and the chief of the Baltimore City Fire Department to testify and petition the NUBC to vote on the incorporation of these two codes into the UB. And while I don't have time to tell you about that meeting because I'm still recovering from the post-traumatic stress, you can imagine what it's like to go into a group of people who are largely hospital associations and ask them for something for public health. And so there was much discussion, again, arguments about the burden, even though it takes about 30 seconds to ask these questions, tested by NIOSH in cancer registries, vital records departments, and in funeral homes, believe it or not. So 30 seconds to ask questions, 2 to 3 seconds for the algorithm to code this information, and hospital associations are still saying this is a burden. The chair of this committee decided not to ask for a vote and deferred it once again, asking us to actually implement the standard and then do a pilot and actually do some more evaluation of this burden, which is difficult to do when states don't have the standard to do that work from. So you can see where this is going. So they deferred our vote. And what we learned at this meeting is that public health is very much under threat when it comes to the process of getting new codes into administrative data. There is a different standard for public health in that we not only have to have a standard that's agreed upon that everyone's using, we actually have to prove it works before we have the standard, which is challenging. Hospitals, when they petition the NUBC, don't have to have such evidence. And so this is a real concern, not only for this particular mission for occupational safety and health, but for anything we do in the future, like the functional disability classification that we want in this field. So what are our next steps? Our next steps are to continue to get letters of support. So on our website, you can contact us. Leah Roman is our project manager. If you have not filled out a letter of support from this and these data are meaningful to you, we still need letters of support because we are escalating this beyond this committee. What we are doing is convening the very top leadership from FEMA, HHS, OSHA, and NIOSH to get this committee to basically behave, because they are not listening to public health when we come with a petition. And that is not okay, because if you'll remember that slide, it's actually a part of their job. So we need your support on this. We need you to follow this. We need you to work with your states and university partners to make sure that these letters of support come in. And hopefully next year we will have some better news for you. So I'd like to just, because I have to run to the occupational section to give this talk as well, I'd like to just take a few minutes if there are questions, comments, ideas that you have on this process.
I have a question. What about the Affordable Care Act and the electronic health record system? How do you plan on getting this into that software?
So the question is, what about the Affordable Care Act and the electronic health record? So we've actually looked at, part of the white paper is talking about accountable care organizations and how those may develop. So these are regional collectives. If you're familiar with the Dartmouth Atlas, this might ring a bell to you, who are responsible for management of groups of people. And this could be one of the ways that they manage and reduce costs and increase quality is by actually collecting occupation and industry so that if someone has Baker's asthma, for example, they know that it's related to work, and therefore they can make sure that the care process considers that in the care plan. We've tried to get this, the IOM testimony about electronic health records. We actually made a meaningful use argument there that this was a part of that, and so NIOSH is pursuing that line with electronic health records. So what we're saying to NUBC is it's coming, because it's the third recommendation, makes an SOC out of the IOM report. It's coming. You can either lead or follow. But we can't wait. EHR is 2014, so we would like to, since NIOX is going to be available in 2012, we'd like to have this now so that we can start doing this work, because the real burden is on the states to decide how they're going to implement this. And so we actually need to focus our energies on giving them assistance as opposed to dealing with the political process. But we all remember how e-codes were, and we know that we're not going to get what we need unless we battle for it a little bit.
Thank you.